Well, this region's different from mine, so.
Well, I'm talking generally about the mountains and the southern mountains. The kind of dancing which was done in the communities which were isolated from the mainstream communities and which is still being done in some of them. For example, growing up or perhaps talking to people who grew up the generation before you, what did you hear about the kinds of dancing that went on in the community and the kind of music that was played before it? How about you, Ron? You grew up in Harmon, and I know there was a strong dance community there.
Yeah, and dancing was, I guess there were two types. One is was called flatfoot dancing. As far as I can tell, I can't see much difference between clogging and flatfoot. Some people make a distinction. To me, it's kind of like the difference between clawhammer and frailing, the banjo. It's the same thing. It's just a little different style, a little different manner, which can be as distinctive as even varying from one individual to another. And the other style was square dancing. We had basically running sets.
Circles,
right.
Didn't you do Virginia reel a long line?
No, no. Never remember seeing a Virginia reel.
Did you do squares, though? Just squares?
Not sure what you mean, Bill.
Just for a couple sets, as opposed to a running big running set.
No. The full running set would break up into two couple pair sets, mm-hmm. You know, four people, mm-hmm. And all that would break up into two couple sets. Start together, break up, run the dance in those patterns with couples. One couple would always stay together, but mm-hmm. They would have couples going in opposite directions. And work your way around the circle, and then end up together. Yeah.
What about you, Frank? What kind of dancing?
Well, our dancing was of two kind. We'd had people like the university club or some group in a town like Bluefield that would call on string musicians sometime to come and play for a dance. Well, that was in a nice big hall at the country club or the university club. Or a church basement or something like that. So we played for those urban groups who had their figure caller and could do all that kind of thing. But out in the rural part, you see, out of town, that's where we had the good stuff. And it was usually at something like a corn chucking. You ever been to a corn chucking? They call it corn husking now, I believe. But it was corn chucking. When I was young, and that would be in a barn, but not usually. They're always talking about barn dances. I've only been in a couple of barn dances, and it's an awful place to have a dance. All this dust and hay and the smell of the manure and everything. It's terrible. It's a good place to hide the liquor, of course. But most of these things were right out in the yard, like the Scots used to do. I hate to get into the Scots-Irish thing. It's been overblown, I think. But anyway, it's right out in the yard, in front of the house, the back of the house, the side yard. And you played music there in the yard or on the porch, and away they went. And they done the Virginia reel, which is kind of like a contra, a pure way, mm-hmm. I think. Mm-hmm. I don't know what mm-hmm. contra. And we had the quadrille or square. Mm-hmm. A forehand reel, and we had the big circle, Appalachian big circle, and they even did round dances, which you would call a waltz. And there were two kinds of dancing. There was a controlled call dance, and then sometimes, like in Braxton County, they just got up and did their thing. There was absolutely no order to it, or figures, or calling, and that was the best part of it. Everybody out there doing solo dance, step dancing, whatever their style was.
On the grass. So
well,
there wasn't a sound.
Dirt or grass. Usually it was wore out just dirt, you know, hard dirt, you know. Yeah. And I'm told that they still do that in the Shetland Islands. They just start playing and people get up and dance. There's no figure caller as such. And I think I told some of you people, those of you that didn't hear my class, need to go to Braxton County, you need to check with Jerry Mills and find out, it's on Friday night at the Central School, I think. They do their thing with homegrown music, and there's very little figure calling. They just get up and do this thing, and it's amazing and a wonderful thing to witness. It's probably the oldest dancing in Braxton County and maybe in the central part of West Virginia. These are all country people, and Sherry Singleton plays the fiddle, and what's her name, plays the guitar? Zadie McLean, another Celtic name, plays the guitar. And somebody plays the Joe Head banjo, ukulele banjo, uke banjo. Anyway, they're different musicians, and they trade around. And Junior Floyd has some magnificent footwork. Oh, it's amazing. And it's worth seeing if you've got time to look it up. But it's that would be a good example of an ancient form, you see. West Virginia dance. But that's the only thing I can remember, just these yard dances like at a corn chucking, where this other stuff would get done, but this eased the pain, you know. You could fiddle a while, you could dance a while, you could chuck a while, go over and take another drink, and then start fiddling again.
I think it's interesting that you did both quadrille and running set, because usually I've only ever found it that you do one or the other. And what I think is see, quadrille is a French kind of dancing that was came with the French and was danced throughout
the
colonies.
I may have my terms crossed.
Well,
up,
quadrille, four couple set.
Right.
Yeah, four couple set. That's a quadrille, is a four couple set, like what modern square dancing is too. And what I think is that people danced in small spaces. They danced in rooms, in houses, primarily.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And if they had six couples, they would just basically alter the quadrille to let six couples in.
Yeah.
And so it came, I think, I'm not, you know, you can't say for sure about these things, but I'm pretty sure that running sets, and running sets are these big circles that Ron was talking about, they came from quadrilles. That they came from, because actually you can do the same figures in a quadrille as in a running set. It's just the main formation that everybody's in.
Well, I've played in doorways for two groups of dancers.
In different rooms?
In the two different rooms. We got too many people, that's a good way to solve that.
I'd like to direct the question to Michael, and then so this won't go on too long. Perhaps we could take a few more questions from people. But you spoke about something that I find very interesting, and I don't know how many people have heard this term, but I've heard and read about the Indianization of the culture of this mountain region, that the settlers, the early settlers who came here, adapted their ways to the Indians who were here, and that this perhaps became one of the predominant influences on what the people here eventually ended up being like, to adapt to this area.
I can give you a perfect example of what the Indians taught some of the early settlers, and that was gardening. When you come into a wilderness, it's hard to cut a lot of trees to make your corn patch. But if you're going to build a cabin, you cut down the trees and you build your log cabin. Incidentally, you learn from the Swedes how to build a so-called horizontal log cabin. That's Swedish know-how. There was a colony of them over in Delaware and they got around, you see, the way to do it. You're familiar with Sweden. Okay, so this is a big job. Well, we need a garden patch now, see. So the Indians showed them how. They come up to a beaver dam that had been abandoned and the dam washed away. Here's this great big nice field of real rich topsoil washed in there, maybe 5 or 6 acres. You've seen them washed
out. Flat.
Okay, it's the right time of year you come in, you plant corn. I don't think the row had to be straight. You planted the corn. A little later you planted beans to climb up the corn so you didn't have to stake them. You come in then with your pumpkins and gourds, and the leaves come out here and keep the weeds from growing. So you had a garden that didn't involve a heck of a lot of work. So now that I know they learned from the Indians. And they might have learned how to hunt, but I kind of doubt that. They'd been hunting people on the other side, and that's more dangerous game. Most dangerous game in the world is somebody else, you know.
If they could learn gardening techniques, there's no telling what else.
Look at your herb medicine.
Yeah.
My God. Gotcha. All the old timers, they had a cure for everything, and some of it worked. And I'm sure they got it from the Indians. They knew were familiar with the plants, and the people that others weren't.
Could we hear an Indian bell?
I'll try to sing one. Frank's given a better example of Indian influence than any I have, and mine are all in my head. The oral record is too fragile now. It's too many years gone by, I think, to get specific examples. That's a good one. But here's an old song I learned from a man who lived for many years in this county, lived until he died here in this county, by the name of Kearns Hammonds. And all the Hammondses looked like they had Indian blood in them, and they were an example of the kind of family I was talking about, who lived on the cutting edge of the wilderness for one generation after another, and who, in fact, discount any recollection of any connection with the British Isles. The Hammondses would always tell you, well, we was here when the Indians come. And they weren't interested in connection between their old songs and examples on the other side. But anyway, this is a song which clearly didn't come from the other side. It was a "The poor little Indian sits in his canoe. He paddles along o'er the waters so blue. He thinks of the time when this land was his own, before those pale-faced ones among him were known. Among him were known, among him were known, before those pale-faced ones among him were known. It's when those white men first came to our land, we took them as brothers, we gave them our hand. And when they got worried, we gave them repose, not thinking those white ones would e'er be our foes. Would e'er be our foes, would e'er be our foes. Not thinking those white ones would e'er be our foes. They built their fine cities all over our land, and on our rich meadows their farmhouses stand. They took all our country from Texas to Maine. The poor Indian now seeks for his wigwam in vain. For his wigwam in vain, for his wigwam in vain. The poor Indian now seeks for his wigwam in vain. But the pride of our country before them did bow. The tall pine and cedar their hatchets laid low. They hunted the beaver, the bear, and the deer, for they knew in them wild woods they had nothing to fear. They had nothing to fear, they had nothing to fear. For they knew in them wild woods they had nothing to fear. Oh, the graves of our forefathers, where are they now? They've turned them all under, they've given them the plow. They've turned them all under from Texas to Maine. The poor Indian now seeks for his wigwam in vain. For his wigwam in vain, for his wigwam in vain. The poor Indian now seeks for his wigwam in vain. And Kearns said that his uncle Mart Hammonds had learnt that song off a couple of old drunken Indians at a July 4th celebration in Webster Springs. That's how he put it. Probably about the turn of the century sometime. So that's where he said it came from.
Well, if it wasn't for the words, I'd swear it was an old Irish woman in County Clare singing as far as the tune and the melody sound. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know.
I think there's been a lot of cross-fertilization there, and it's real obvious. Maybe we have time for just a few questions.
How about the auto harp down there? That's not a part of old time week, but I see that someone has it from here.
Yeah, I just had that. I brought it.
Could you give us a...
To show some.
He's dying to pick one up.
I don't care.
I thought he'd...
I brought it just to show someone, but I...
Now, that should go back to the German outline, shouldn't it?
No, that's
Oscar Schmidt, of course.
Schmidt from where? Philadelphia? New York.
Schmidt? Oscar Schmidt.
No, it was a man named Zimmerman.
Zimmerman.
Oh, that's right. You're right. Zimmerman. That's right. It is. I'm
Zimmerman,
sorry. Zimmerman.
Yeah. Yeah.
The first thing, you got an old Zimmerman, do you not?
I think I did.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. I was wrong.
Arthur Schmidt had the company.
He got the company. But right, Zimmerman. That's right. The oldest, the oldest ones you see will have the Zimmerman label on them.
This is another instrument that came in probably
parlor.
After 1910 or so.
Yeah. Parlor area.
With the wish book.
Yeah.
With the wish book. That's right. These were procured through the wish books. So the style I play, some people tend to feel that it's an Appalachian style developed. They say Pop Stoneman developed it, Ivy Stoneman, and then Mother Maybelle's the one that made it more known, where you play with anywhere from, I play with three, a lot of folks go on and put the fourth, five picks in fact, I tend to use four. But. Frosty night, not a star was in sight, and the north wind was howling down the line. Stood a brave engineer with his sweetheart so dear, and his orders to pull old number nine. Well, he kissed her goodbye with a tear in his eye, but the joy in his heart he could not hide. For the whole world seemed bright when she told him that night that tomorrow she'd be his blushing bride. So it goes on and on. So that's the... Yeah, play something for Frank. I want to... Yeah. I told my banjo class today, if someone wants to see a really... unique form of thumb, clawhammer style. Franklin, I've never seen anyone that could play quite the way Frank interprets the thumb style.
I'm getting pain in my chest.
It's something.
I don't think I'm able to do it.
Pick one, Frank. Pick one.
Now you all listen and watch the thumb.
Is this banjo fifth pick on?
It's so big.
We did the neck.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'll just mention while I'm tuning, I'm part Choctaw Indian, but I'm sorry I can't tell you a thing about it. All I know is none of my music come from Choctaw. Well, I might mention something else. We'll be here all night. We were talking about years back. I learned from my grandfather, this is a generation thing, who learned from slaves or ex-slaves, as the case may be. He was born in 1856. Well, he was 8 years old by the time they were freed. He probably had learned the banjo at that time. He'd probably learned to dance from these blacks who did not leave after they were free. So I've got my banjo picking secondhand from slaves in Greenbrier County, except another fellow by the name of Emory Horton, who I admired greatly. I have done a lot of changing to imitate him because I thought he was great, you know. I don't play just like my granddaddy unless I think about it on certain tunes. So there's a connection that might be of interest. Just once removed from the slave, see. So, have at it.
What do you want me to do?
Oh, God, do that Elkhorn.
Why don't you play something that you might remember having heard as a kid, in part something that
you might have heard your
maybe
goodness.
A style or something.
A native tune.
A native tune. Shady Grove, that's one that's kind of common in the whole thing. They're pretty poly.
You ought to hear me.
Concludes our evening.